Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Thank you, Earl. Welcome back. We're Grant and Danny. You are listening to 106.7 The Fan. Every day at noon, we cover multiple teams in town you care about at 12. Jam it into one segment. We call it our Beltway Blitz. Let's get it started right now on the gridiron. Pete Haley covers the football team for NBCSportsWashington.com, and he joins us on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. Pete, the injury to Matt Ioannidis, how damaging is it?
I think it's incredibly damaging, and maybe it's helped a little bit by having Tim Settle there to back him up. I know that's someone both Ron Rivera and Jack Del Rio were really fond of in the offseason. They mentioned him a couple times, sometimes unprompted. So at least this injury is happening at their deepest spot, but that doesn't mean you should overlook how big of a loss Ioannidis is. He's so underrated. He improved his sack totals every year. He looked like he had a serious chance of doing that again. So it's going to be a big-time absence for the rest of the year. It's a sad story for sure.
Why did Ron Rivera change his tone regarding Dwayne Haskins?
I don't know. I mean, I sense that tone change too, and it's weird when Ron is managing some things in a way that suggests he is all about the future, but then he kind of ups the pressure on Dwayne a little bit in his Monday presser by saying there's a cutoff point, and I do acknowledge that. We're not at the bridge yet. I'll get to it when I cross it, but just the mere point that he even said there was a bridge off in the distance somewhere definitely perked up my ears. And I think it's because Ron was really keen on in this point that a lot of players deserved better on Sunday. He felt like his defense did what it could, especially that undermanned defensive line. And he saw some skilled players step up, and he saw Scott Turner call a better game. And it's hard when there's one player who's so clearly at the root of a loss like Dwayne was on Sunday. So I think if you're asking why did Ron change his tone, I think that's why. Because in Arizona, there's a lot of things going wrong. Dwayne was just one of them. But in Cleveland, Dwayne was such a chief issue, and it cost them a win, or at least a chance to secure a win, that I think Ron kind of said, all right, you know, we need to apply a little more pressure on this kid and let him know what he's doing right now cannot be done much longer.
Pete, you said that Rivera made it clear there would be a point where he would have to make a change, but he didn't define that. When would that be? What would have to happen?
I don't know if it's more of what would have to happen. I mean, of course, more performances like Cleveland would make it easier to move on. I think the bye week being right in the middle of the season could be a nice place to separate and go somewhere else. But I am still, I guess, kinder to Dwayne than maybe a lot of people are. At least I have more patience for what he's going through than a lot of fans do. Mostly because, like, what's the rush? You know, Kyle Allen, at least I think Kyle Allen isn't going to be a long-term quarterback for an NFL team. And Alex Smith is 36, and I know older quarterbacks exist throughout the NFL, but I'm just not sure he's going to be the answer either. So if they had like a third rounder out of Tennessee that they drafted and had a good training camp and you wanted to see more of, sure, maybe I'd be rushing to get to that guy. But even though Dwayne was just a abject disaster against the Browns, I want to see if he can rebound. And like Ron, I know there will be a point where I'm ready to stop being so patient with him. I just don't think I'm there yet. But he's got to have some sort of performance soon where you can at least point to, all right, the first couple weeks were bad, but there's what we need to see, because we can't talk about what he did against the Eagles and the Giants for six quarters last year that much longer. I mean, that's fading further and further in the background.
Pete, I got in an argument with a buddy last night, and it wasn't heated, but there was still passion there. You know those kinds of arguments. He argued with me, and I want to ask you what you think about this. We're letting the defense off the hook for their performance against Cleveland the other day. I know they got put in some bad spots. They didn't hold them to any field goals when some bad, you know, field position changes happened off interceptions. They let Chubb and Kareem Hunt run roughshod over them in the second half. We're letting that group that's supposed to be the strength of the team off the hook. We hold them to a different standard because they're supposed to be better than the offense. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, I think whoever that buddy was making a pretty solid point. I don't know if I'm going to totally let them off the hook, even though they're put in all those short fields, and even though as soon as they sat down to take a drink of their Gatorade, Dwayne was throwing a ball to another Browns defender, and they had to get up to go, and they had to face those two running backs. Like you said, this is the group that has accepted the responsibility that they need to carry this team if the team is going to be successful. So I don't think we should let them off the hook, but at the same time, I think we need to understand that they lost Matt Ioannidis and Chase Young, and there's all those turnovers. So, I don't know, that's an entirely boring answer. I'm kind of sitting on both sides there. You're right, the defense needs to be better, but it's just hard for them to hold up so much throughout a game against such a talented offense when their own offense was just completely falling apart, at least the quarterback was.
What's the receiver rotation and usage going to look like if Dontrell Inman doesn't play this weekend?
Well, luckily it sounds like they're at least optimistic that Inman can play. It wasn't a fractured hand, but behind him, maybe Antonio Gandy-Golden finally gets to play a little more. It was interesting to see Scott Turner give him a reverse handoff or a jet sweep handoff against the Browns. But I think it's going to have to be him. Even though Inman was really impressive and helpful against the Browns, I just don't know if we can expect many more two-touchdown performances. So healthy or not, I think the rotation will start changing. One guy I can't wait to see more of course, is Isaiah Wright. After being totally uninvolved in 2 weeks, Turner used him in a multitude of ways, giving him a handoff, using him on screens, letting him run a couple deeper routes. So maybe Wright can continue to take some snaps away. Because Dontrell Inman, good form to catch two touchdowns, first touchdown in the NFL in a long time. But I would like to see more of Wright and more of Gandy-Golden and maybe less of 80 as the year goes on, regardless of his health.
Pete, quick one for me before we let you jump. Linebacker rotation has been very interesting, as Holcomb's been banged up. But we've seen a little bit of everybody. Sean Dion Hamilton, Bostic, Pierre Lewis, Thomas Davis. Just give me your kind of thoughts on that group. I feel like they've performed adequately.
Definitely adequately is a good way to describe it. And I think we're seeing a lot of those guys because, to me, they all are kind of similar. They may not be exactly the speediest linebackers. I know KPL has the most athleticism in that group, and Cole Holcomb, when he gets back, can bring some flash to that as well. But the Bostic, the Dion Hamiltons, the Thomas Davises, they're just your big linebackers who can help in the run game. They're going to be a little challenged in the pass game, but I guess when it comes to having five or six guys who can do the same thing, it is somewhat of a plus because you can use them interchangeably. But I will give credit to John Bostic. He's played a lot better than I expected him to, and I always kind of slept on him or maybe detracted from his ability just because I felt like he'd be more better served playing in 2005 than 2020, but a couple sacks so far, and he's a leader of that defense. So overall, the linebackers have been better than I thought, and playing behind that D-line helps too. But hopefully everybody can step it up on that side of the ball to help out Dwayne and company on the other side.
Thank you, Pete. Much appreciated, pal.
Thanks, guys. Talk to you soon.
All right, be well. Go read his work, NBCSportsWashington.com. Speaking of reading, Jesse Dougherty of the Washington Post joins us to talk baseball on the Blitz. I will get to the Nats, and Danny will as well. But, Jesse, I want to start big picture in baseball. What a day today. A lot made of the expansion of the playoffs. But from a sheer television standpoint in this wild card round, 16 teams in action, 8 in each league. We've got NCAA tournament-style games all day today. This is going to be a blast for baseball fans.
Yeah, Grant, I mean, you took the words out of my mouth. I think it feels like March Madness a little bit, doesn't it? I mean, I think the process to get here was cumbersome, and I think for fans it was hard to follow, and I think that's has to be a big consideration moving forward. When you need to become essentially a detective to figure out if your team's still alive in the last week of the season, it's probably not the best system. But by that same token, I mean, this week's going to feel like we're kind of kids in the candy store for baseball fans. So I know I'm really excited. I mean, tomorrow, 8 games in one day, and just one after another, it's going to be really awesome to see.
How should we view whatever the hell this was for the Nationals? As soon as they lost Steven Strasburg, this was a different season. I think the ceiling lowered, and then some other injuries happened, et cetera, some underachievement from several guys you didn't expect. Should we be disappointed? Should we just kind of shrug our shoulders? Just give me your big picture, 30,000-foot view.
Yeah, my 30,000-foot view is that for the team, I wouldn't be that worried. I think, if you played 162 and this was the result, it'd be really disappointing. Kind of think back to 2018 when they went 82-80, and it was like, well, that was a lot of time to end up here, right? But I think to spend 60 games and underachieve and never really get hot, and then go into the offseason and sort of just be able to credit somewhat to the circumstances, I think you're okay team-wide. But what I do think is that on the individual performance level, you have to weigh the positives the same way that you weigh the negatives. So if we're going to be excited about Juan Soto's batting title, we need to also be concerned about Victor Robles' production. If you're going to be excited about Trey Turner's great season, you need to be concerned with Carter Kuechly's production. If you're going to be excited about, you know, go on and on, Tanner Rainey's emergence, you got to be worried about Patrick Corbin giving up the league high 85 hits. Like, every positive can be weighed down by a negative to some extent. And it's not necessarily that you need to sort of, you know, temper your excitement over Juan Soto. But I also think that you can't just say, wow, it was so great that this guy was so good, and then not turn around and say, but that guy wasn't. And if we're going to be like, you know, it's a great sign for the future of all these great things that happened, it's not so great signs for the future when your, you know, franchise center fielder potentially really struggled and your rookie third baseman really showed a slow learning curve at the plate. So I would say I'm thinking of it way more of an individual level than I am a team level, but that could still sort of be a certain level of concern.
Jesse, Juan Soto, to your point, won the batting title in the NL and hit .351. Now let's say you extrapolate that out over four more months and he only hits .320. That's ridiculous. What a season he had. And I mean, he has cemented himself with very little help this year behind him in the lineup as one of the great players in baseball, hadn't he?
Yeah, I mean, it's unbelievable. And I think you consider how much he's walking, that he's making the most of so many opportunities to hit. So not only do we look at the 10 or 11 intentional walks in September, but also the number of at-bats that teams pitch around him. And I think what Soto has gotten so good at is picking his spots, even though the spots, the number of them is so small. And I think that's such a difficult thing to do, especially for a young hitter, because if you think about it, you know, if you're getting every eight of every 10 pitches are pretty much, you know, bad pitches that are just trying to get you to chase, you need to identify those two pitches really well. And he's so adept at doing that. He's so adept at figuring out which ones are worth trying to hit that we see the production numbers are just off the charts. And for him to sort of produce in that way in so few opportunities, not just considering that he missed 13 games, but also that pitchers are so often trying to stay away from his bat. I mean, that just adds a whole other layer to it, that his recognition, his plate discipline, his ability to read counts and read spin. I mean, it's remarkable. And I think we've talked about this a million times when I've sort of chatted with you guys about like ways in which we can be more impressed by him. And somehow he keeps finding them. It's like, well, you know, he hit three home runs in the World Series off potential Hall of Famers. Yeah, what can he do now? Well, he can go out and win the batting title. It's unbelievable. So for me, it's like, I'm going to stop thinking that there aren't new ways. I'm just going to wait to see what they are and be really excited to cover them.
Jesse, thank you, buddy. I guess congrats on another season in the books. Big question mark again, but good work,
yeah,
buddy. Thank you.
A weird time warp, but I appreciate it.
Jesse Dougherty of the Washington Post. Grant and Danny on the Fan. We should revisit the baseball playoff format that starts today at 2 o'clock, some of the games on the docket, and just how cool this bracket is going to be. We could do that at 12:45 ahead of Dan Helly, who joins us at 1 from NFL Network. Next, Ron Rivera's tone sure changed on Dwayne Haskins from Sunday after the game until yesterday. Why? We'll try to delve into that. Ron Rivera, after the game on Sunday, made it very clear Dwayne Haskins is his guy moving forward and will continue to be his guy. He didn't say anything yesterday that makes you think that he's about to bench Dwayne Haskins, but he certainly didn't speak as adamantly or with the conviction that he had one day earlier about how the job is Haskins's no matter what. On Sunday after the game, he was quoted as saying, as long as he continues to do the things that show you that he can make things happen, I'm going to support the young man. I'm not going to pull the plug on him because something like this happens. In my opinion, he's barely through a rookie year right now. In terms of being out there, learning and growing, he's going to get better. He's going to grow. And I think he's a guy we can follow. He said, that's what we did with Cam Newton. And look where he is today. Well, Cam Newton threw for 400 yards and 300 yards in his first two games. Haskins has never thrown for 270, but I digress. He said, that's what we did with Cam Newton, and look where he is today. Cam Newton is a league MVP because we trusted him and took our lumps with him. I'll take my lumps with Dwayne, end quote. I mean, you really can't back a quarterback after a terrible game better than he did. Agreed. Saying, I'm not going to pull the plug on Dwayne Haskins. That was the headline in a lot of stories. That was Sunday. This was yesterday after watching the film, going back, talking to people with the team, talking to players, whatever else he did. This was his tone yesterday with the media.
And again, there were a lot of guys that gave their heart, put their heart out on the field, and truthfully, they deserve better. I mean, when you look at the way, you know, Deron played and Jonathan and Montez, I mean, you know, guys like that are leaving it on the field. John Bostic, I mean, you know, guys played hard. You know, then you turn around the offense side and you look at those guys on the offensive line were battling and fighting too. And, you know, the things that the backs did and the receivers and tight. I mean, you have to, you know, say at some point there is. And I'll cross that bridge when I get there.
You know, when that bridge may be. Is there like a cut point? Like, obviously you want there to
is.
Grow,
for,
you
for me, there is.
Progress, but is there going to be a time where you just got to, in a sense, maybe cut bait in a way?
Yes, there is. I mean, again, and you brought up the point, and it's a very good point, is that there are guys in that locker room that are playing well enough for us to win. And again, we have to make sure everybody is playing well enough to win at that point. And there is a cutoff point for me. There is.
That was Rivera yesterday. So here's the question. We can open up the phones on this. Haven't taken calls yet today, but the AAA Always On Call listener lines open for the first time now at 800-636-1067. 800-636-1067. Do you notice a difference? Are we making something out of nothing? Could both be true, what he said on Sunday and what he said on Monday? Because what he said yesterday was that the rest of the team deserved better from their quarterback, that there is a point when you would need to make a change. He was asked point blank, when you get to that bridge, is that one you'd cross? And he said, yes, absolutely. There are guys in the locker room playing well enough to win. Everyone needs to do their part. How different do you think those 2 days' worth of answers were?
Tom Cruise and Cameron Diaz started a terrible movie called Night and Day. That's the answer. Here's what happened. He watched the film and went, oh, my God.
You think it's that simple?
Game.
I mean, 100%. He was standing on the sideline, had a pretty good seat. You were sitting at home. I was sitting at home. It was pretty clear watching that game. Ron Rivera has seen more football than you and I will ever see in our lives since he turned 40 probably. Like, he didn't know until he watched the film that Haskins played bad?
Not that. He knew he wasn't playing great, but I think the extent, I think it was probably pointed out to him. Or he saw it himself, where not only are we throwing interceptions here, but look at what we missed here. Look what we missed on this play. Look what we missed on this play. This should have been a touchdown to McLaurin. This should have been this. This should have been this. And I think when you add it up, you go, oh, my God, we should have won this football game. And those guys, when they watch, they have access to the same film we do. We're using it as a teaching tool when we come in here to sort of figure out what to do better next week, are going to see the same thing. I have to say something. I have to. I can't just tell them, yep, keep pushing the boulder uphill, Sisyphus. We're going to be fine. I have to address this. That's the only explanation I could think of for the dramatic turnaround and change. Because you're basically going from tough, this is our guy. We got to support him. He's got to figure it out. We're going to do everything we can to make him successful too. Yeah, if we keep this up, he's going to come out of the game. Like that couldn't be more different. That couldn't be more different. And all it was 24 hours. To me, access to the footage, I think, tells the story.
So I think that maybe there's a part of it that could be watching the film, because it's always going to tell you more than just real time, right? You know he played badly. But when I went back and watched some of last night, the Sunday game, what stood out to me was some of the throws he didn't make. Like, you and I harped on and critiqued the interceptions or the inaccuracies. I tweeted a picture this morning of I think it was a 3rd-and-2, actually, where Terry McLaurin is open for a first down. Haskins is at the back of his drop. He's planted. He's ready. And he turns McLaurin down for some reason I'll never understand. And on the play, he actually ended up getting sacked. Like, he kind of flushed to his left and ran into a pressure and got sacked on what should have been a pretty easy chain-moving play. Now, I haven't gotten through the entire game, and I don't see what these coaches see. I don't pretend to. I mean, I'm just a dummy who watches the games back with a Game Pass subscription I use on NFL.com. But my guess is if you see 7, 8, 9 plays where you had something that didn't get taken advantage of and you leave X amount of yards and X amount of first downs on the field and you add that to what you already knew about the picks and the inaccuracies, maybe you feel worse about the performance. So I'll give the benefit of the doubt maybe to what you're saying, but I'm actually going to go – I'm going to zig where you zagged. I'm going to go in a different direction. The question is what changed, right? That's what we're trying to figure out. 800-636-1067. Why is Rivera so adamantly defensive of his quarterback right after the game? And then why the next day is it seemingly a very, very different conversation? I think he had to have some discussion with somebody. And I don't know if that's a veteran player. I don't know if that's I doubt it would be like a John Allen type on the defensive side of the ball, but I'm just trying to think of who their leaders are, right? Either a leader, a veteran type player, or someone in the front office who basically said, hey, just a thought, I would hedge a little bit, Ron, on this all that matters is Dwayne staying on the field and playing thing, because you got a lot of guys in that locker room who are paying attention to what you're saying, who just battled their butts off and probably should have won this football game. So maybe this isn't necessarily the week to go hard in the paint with that idea. You know, and I say this on the air every day for anyone that listens. I'm sticking with Dwayne Haskins. I'm playing him as often as I can, as possible, as much as possible, until he's not healthy enough to go, because I want to see what he is. And Rivera can feel that way, Danny, but I don't think as a coach you can say that. Like, you can't just come out. Imagine being Kyle Allen. Imagine being Alex Smith in that quarterback room, let alone, again, the players who feel like they should be 2-1 right now. Well, no matter what happens, no matter how he plays, he keeps starting. You're trying to build a meritocracy. You know, he was doing this shtick where he said it was a competition and Alex Smith and Kyle Allen are both going to have a shot to start when he took over the job. He was doing that because that's what coaches do. That's the kind of stuff they say. Mm-hmm. You can't come out and just say he's going to play 16 straight games. So to me, it almost felt like somebody got to him, Danny. Do you buy this at all? And said, Ron, I'm telling you, our players heard that. And after watching that game and being on the field, that they all knew that they didn't have a shot because of that performance. You can't essentially make it seem like he could do that 10 more times and start 10 straight games.
That's not crazy. That's not a crazy hypothetical or philosophy as to how that happened.
Because he challenged him, and he said he's got to be better. Like, if he basically said to me yesterday, Danny, if he keeps playing like that, I would have to bench him. He didn't say, I'm going to. He didn't say his job's in jeopardy. He didn't say Kyle Allen is really good. All he basically said was, confirming, yeah, if he keeps playing like that, he's not going to keep his job, which the day before he was unwilling to say. So why did that change?
That's as good, again, that's as plausible an explanation as any. I mean, to me, the most likely, and, you know, Ron Rivera, you could hear it in his answers whenever he was, when he's asked about the timeout thing, he bristled a little bit, but his whole point is, I don't have to answer anything to you. I'm developing my football team in the way I see fit. Not that he ignores advice or whatever, but he's always been his own man, and convention means nothing to Ron Rivera. Ron Rivera is going to do it Ron Rivera's way. So I buy that explanation saying, hey, from a player or from an assistant coach or somebody, a position group guy, hey, Ron, you can't just give him carte blanche at this point. Guys are ticked, and that's plausible. I still think the leader in the clubhouse is he saw how truly bad it was, where in real time you can't tell from the sideline that he turned down three guys that were open or missed this window or everything else. When you closely look at it after the fact, you could probably tell that. But your explanation is as good as any, honestly.
What changed between Sunday and Monday? That's what we want to know. 800-636-1067. And while Rivera's tone clearly was different, do you think that the amount of leash for Haskins changed at all? Do you think that going into the game, Rivera may have thought one thing about how long he'd stick with him, and has that altered at all? Grant and Danny on the Fan.
They play all the time. Plus, you've got guys that can make plays, so all you need to do is get the ball into their hands and let them go out and make plays.
Ron Rivera on Sunday postgame saying he was riding with Dwayne Haskins, and that there was no reason to discuss Haskins' future as the starter. Fast forward to Monday. This is what Rivera said to reporters in a Zoom session yesterday.
You know, when that bridge may be, is there like a cut point? Like, obviously you want to see
is.
Grow,
for, you for, for see me, there is.
Progress, but is there going to be a time where you just got to, in a sense, maybe cut bait in a way?
Yes, there is. I mean, again, and you brought up the point, and it's a very good point, is that there are guys in that locker room that are playing well enough for us to win. And again, we have to make sure everybody is playing well enough to win at that point. And there is a cutoff point for me. There is.
Washington Crunch on Twitter says, Rivera simply watched the tape, met with his coaches, period. This is why he changed his position, sort of, about Haskins. He says nobody got to him. I don't think anybody got to him, but my point is maybe there was a combo where either players or coaches said, hey, I don't know that you could just say outright, essentially, no matter what happens, he's going to keep playing. Wookie says these two things can coexist. He says, he's my guy, I support him Sunday, and he has a finite amount of leash, an indication that anything changed. He says, I don't think so. I think those two things can both be true. And that's part of the question. I think that might be very fair. It just seemed like the tone and the willingness to discuss Haskins in the future and whether he could be benched. something he wasn't going to do Sunday, he was doing Monday. That could be as simple as you let your hair down a little bit in the Monday press conference, which normally is 20 to 30 minutes long. And Sunday right after the game, when I was covering the team, that was like 5 to 8, 9 minutes. You're just kind of getting your first thoughts on what just happened. Let's go to Tony in Long Island on line one. Tony, you're on Grant and Danny on the Fan. How are you?
How we doing, guys?
What's up, Tony?
Good.
All right, so I don't think anyone got to Rivera. I love the video, the audio clip that you just played right after the break, where Rivera was talking about you got to get the ball in the hands of the playmakers and let them do their job. So if you give me a second, I have a little. I looked under the hood on one thing that's been really irking me this season, and I'd like to throw it to your attention because I do think this is reflective of Haskins' overall play with 2020.
Go for it.
Two names. Yeah. Two words. Steven Sims, what has happened to him? Follow these stats, guys. The last four games of last year, Steven Sims was on the field for 70% of the offensive snap. He received 36 targets. Write that number down. 36 targets in the last four games, 20 receptions, 230 yards, and four touchdowns. McLaurin had 25 targets over the same last four games. So in essence, Steven Sims was our greatest offensive weapon at the end of last year. Now we fast forward to 2020 with Scott Turner's offense and Dwayne Haskins. He only has 8 targets, 6 receptions, 100 yards, 0 touchdowns. You know how many targets he had last week? 0. And he's on the field, just so you know, for 70% of the snaps, by far the second most on the team, triple anybody else other than McLaurin, who's on the field for 90%. So what this is talking about is those deposits, Grant, that you talk about, like yeah. The withdrawals are going to be there. But Steven Sims has been completely erased out of the offense. Haskins is not running this offense properly. There's no way that Scott Turner and Rivera are putting Steven Sims on the field for 70% of the offensive snaps to get 0 targets. And I really do think that is reflective of what Rivera was just saying about, hey, we got to get the ball in the hands of playmakers. I mean, we were gaga for Steven Sims last year. Where is he? We're not good enough to have that guy be dismissed.
So I agree with you. I think it's a good call. I'll say this about this week, and you're right, he played a bunch. The reason, though, that Wright was playing and that Gandy Golden played so much is that Sims had been dealing with turf toe throughout the week, and so he was not close to 100%. Now, rather than dismissing your point, because it's something that I was bringing up.
I think the general point's right.
Last week. The general point is correct. He's not been involved in the offense at all. I mean, this is a bad example, but I actually used my last round in every fantasy league I was in this year pick on Steven Sims, because I thought there was a chance he could catch 60, 70 balls. You know, things went haywire and game script called for them to throw it every down in the second half. He's been completely uninvolved. So this week I'll give them a little bit more of a pass because he wasn't completely healthy, although your point on snaps and percentage of time on the field, you'd think that the ball would have found his way a couple of times. But well, just by and large, through two games, he's been, before this week rather, when he was healthy, he was completely uninvolved.
Well, so to really crystallize that, Terry McLaurin leads the team correctly, by the way. Correctly, with the most targets with 25.
Is he over nipping Logan Thomas?
Nipping at his heels incorrectly, I might add, is Logan Thomas the 24. That needs to change immediately. I'm all set on force-feeding Logan Thomas.
See, I'll disagree with you on that. I think Logan Thomas has been fine, and throwing to the tight end is a good thing to do.
I'm not morally opposed to it. I don't want a constitutional amendment banning it. Logan Thomas is not a better weapon than Steven Sims. Logan Thomas does not need to have one target less than Terry McLaurin. To me, I'm increasing Sims' target share. Now, again, non-turf toe division. This is really more about the first couple of games. That needs to be closer. I don't need Logan Thomas at 24 and Steven Sims at 8
but they do,
through 3
You're talking about slightly different things, right? I mean, Steven Sims in this offense, you've seen him kind of going down the seam. He's running corner routes. He's running downfield. Logan Thomas, I would imagine, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but of his 24 targets.
Of his route depth, yeah.
I'd imagine 15 or 18 of those are within 6 or 7 yards from the line of scrimmage.
It's then I'll a lot use of like, Sims in that way, which is what he was last year,
you
towards
sure.
the end. You know, like that working underneath and kind of the middle, Logan Thomas not separating from people isn't that much fun to watch. I'd rather have Sims do it. But again, this is all, it's all, everything's connected, right? Where last year you could not run the ball almost ever because your tight end stunk and Steven Sims in the game, that's not a blocker. So you're using Thomas to sort of add some of that deception. I get that. I just need that target share to change. I can't have a 3-to-1 ratio for Thomas to Sims.
That's fine. I mean, I'm going to get back to the point at hand here with Haskins, but I think it sounds to me like you're anti-Thomas, which I don't quite understand. I think he's kind of proven he could be a really good tight end, too, in an awesome offense. Now, the problem is he's a tight end one here, but, you know, with what they've got, I got no problem with getting him the ball when he's open, which is what they've been doing. Steve is in Houston on line two on Grant and Danny. What's up, Steve? Why did Rivera's tone change from Sunday to Monday?
I guess, you know, maybe somebody did get to him, but I think it's really simplified. You know, you got a three game sample size, and you know he came up with the grade, and after the three games, it's like, okay, I need to pause for concern here. And you know, you guys brought up something really good. And Danny, I don't have enough time as a caller. I had to be a featured guest. I had the perfect Marvel nerd example about Dwayne Haskins yesterday, but I couldn't. You get the show ended. I came in late, and you guys couldn't get to my call. Danny, you would have loved it.
Tweet me at Funny Danny. Hit me up. I want to hear it. I want to see it.
I'm curious about it myself. You can't go to it now?
Yeah, let me go to it. So I'm a rob away from the Revere thing. So here we go. Let's nerd it out and get comic book style real quick. So when you guys were talking about Haskins yesterday, right? And you made an excellent point. Like, the three interceptions, I don't care about, right? And I'm the same way. It's the fact that he doesn't do enough to recover. Like, I've been calling in. It was a show later on, I think, with a guy, Chris Miles, and the other station. And I said, you know what? He doesn't remind me. If he would be more like Ryan Fitzpatrick, the Phillip Rivers types, you know, they give you 3-4 interceptions, but then they come back with 3-4-5 touchdowns. That's the thing. He doesn't give us enough to recover. So here's the nerd part. Danny, so let's go X-Men here, Professor X. Uh-huh. Remember when Cyclops was first discovered? Scott, I forget the actual name. Scott Summers, I think it's Cyclops.
Scott Summers,
or something. Yep. And remember when he found out, you know, he was the mutant and what his ability was to shoot those lasers out of the eye. And that's how Haskins is. He has, you know, with the 6'4", 200-something-pound frame, he has the rocket arm, yada, yada, yada. And Chris Spielman alluded to it on the game the other day. It's the subtle nuances that Haskins doesn't have that's holding him back. Here's the connection. Until Professor X or whoever it was in the X-Men mansion, where they put that eyewear on Cyclops,
you fit the
remember Cyclops was just shooting beams all over the place, right? It became fine-tuned once he got the proper eyewear.
So Haskins needs his eyewear is what you're telling us.
Yeah, whatever the real-life eyewear version of, you know, the comic book is,
he
needs that, man.
I love it.
You know,
right now, he's Cyclops shooting those lasers out the eye all over the factory.
Every time he opens his eyes, he throws it through a building. I get it.
Dude, it just burning everything. Zoom, you know what I mean? So,
that's funny.
Yeah,
Thank you, Steve. Appreciate the call, buddy. It's well done. I mean, the physical tools are there. And he's a rhythm guy. When he gets into a rhythm, he can start dropping some balls in the buckets. We've seen
it. And when they go quick, right, he gets the line of scrimmage.
Absolutely.
1, 2, 3, boom, right?
In a practice setting or, you know, different times where when he's feeling it, he can make all the throws. There's wow stuff. But that same dropping his arm angle down to throw a ball on a bubble screen around a defender coming off the edge, you know, he does it when he doesn't have to, and it's an incompletion. And what you love is now what drives you crazy. The Major League Baseball playoffs start today. The bracket is unreal. It's just weird, and it's going to be fun and juicy, and everyone's involved, it seems like, but the Nationals. We'll get to it next on The Fan. Baseball extended its playoff field. 8 in each league making it in somehow, some way, the Washington Nationals. It's never been easier to make the playoffs than this year. Did not get in. It's a shame because the playoffs start today at 2:00. It's going to be really, really fun to watch this whole thing play out, and they won't be a part of it. But I thought for a minute before we get to Dan Helly at the top of the hour from NFL Network to recap week 3 in the NFL,
talk about the Washington football team, we could just take a peek at some of the specifics on the Major League Baseball playoffs. Before we do, just kudos Juan Soto, man. Batting title, hit 350 this year. We didn't get to talk about him a lot in the final week of the season with football cranking up, but Soto was on another level. He is a superstar. Davey Martinez has been on record for about a year now saying he thinks he'll win an MVP award. And with all due respect to Davey, I disagree. I think he's going to win multiple MVP awards. I mean, he's going to not just win one, but two or three maybe. This is a Hall of Fame-type player we're seeing in front of our eyes.
People don't do what he's done at this young of an age. Again, we kind of went through this drill once before with Bryce Harper, who's leveled off, quite frankly, after that 2015 season where he was so transcendent. And by the way, similar to what Juan Soto did in this abbreviated year, with zero around him, with no help, Juan Soto getting intentionally walked and taking his own walks time after time after time, he actually didn't have enough at-bats to technically qualify for the batting title, but he had enough plate appearances because he walked so many times. The way I said it didn't make sense. The point is, if he just, you've added up his at-bats, he wouldn't have had enough to qualify for the batting title, but he had plenty of plate appearances because he walked a billion times. He's really good at that. He's that exceptional, not expanding the zone, honing his knowledge of the strike zone as he has. He's so good. He is so unbelievably good. They absolutely need, they are in dire straits need for an impact bat behind him. It can't just be Starlin Castro, please and thank you. A real adult that strikes fear in opponents' hearts, please.
Sweet 16 in baseball set for the playoffs to begin with the AL taking center stage today. The National League gets going tomorrow. In fact, both leagues will play, so we'll have eight playoff games. It's going to feel like the NCAA tournament. It's really going to be amazing. So they're calling this opening round the wild card round. They will then play the traditional division series at neutral sites, San Diego, Los Angeles, Arlington, and Houston. So they're playing in California and in Texas next round. Then the league championship series, October 11th through the 17th, are going to be held in San Diego and in Arlington. And obviously the AL will be in San Diego and the NL will be in Arlington, so you're not going to have a team playing in their home ballpark. But for this wild card round, it's a best of three series, which makes this, starting at 2 o'clock today with the first game,
awesome.
Incredibly compelling, because you could be the 1-seed Rays taking on the 8-seed Jays in the AL, or in the NL, the Dodgers and the Brewers, and you could have been a juggernaut all year long like Los Angeles, and if Brandon Woodruff for the Brewers shoves and beats you in game one, your back is completely against the wall immediately. Really, really fun setup here for these wild card rounds that begin today. But of the eight teams in the American League, your matchups, you got the Rays and the Blue Jays, Indians and Yankees, Shane Bieber and Garrett Cole going tonight at 7 o'clock.
Sign me up, please.
Awesome. Twins and the Astros, Dusty Baker back in the playoffs. Houston barely got in. They really shouldn't be there. They're barely .500 team. But Dusty gets a chance to right his playoff evils. The A's and the White Sox, your American League matchups. And then in the National League, the Dodgers play the Brewers. I love watching the Padres. They've got the Cardinals. The Cubs are playing the Marlins. How about Miami making the playoffs, Danny?
Yeah. 31-29.
Again, expanded field, but you think about the beginning of their year and the COVID results. Crazy, they're the 6-seed. And then the Braves, the 2-seed, having won 3 straight NL East titles, play the Cincinnati Reds, and they've got to deal with Trevor Bauer in that series, who is going to be the Cy Young Award winner in the National League. But today, 2 o'clock, as I mentioned, for the first game, you start your NCAA tournament viewing back-to-back-to-back-to-back games throughout the day.
I mean, the players might not like it, honestly, just because they're, the shortened season or whatever you want to call it, but this is exciting. This is exciting. This is sort of their hardship, so to speak, it's at their expense that we get something unique and enjoyable. When has this ever happened? When has anything like this gone on? It used to be you could win 103 games and go home like the Giants did that one year when the Braves in the AL and the NL West, mind you, won it. This is now the opposite of that. This is tournament style. This is who's the beast of the East. Every kid that played Legion ball or AAU or travel ball did one of these things where 16 teams enter and you've got, a hostess cupcake between games and, figuring out who the hell's going to pitch. It's awesome. This is really fun.
How about ESPN stashing a game? They're going to ABC Network at 2:05 today for the Astros and the Twins rather than going to ESPN2. They got Astros Twins at 2 o'clock. On ESPN at 3 o'clock, White Sox A's. 5:07 today, Blue Jays Rays on TBS. And then ESPN tonight at 7 o'clock with Yankees Indians. and that should be that Cole Bieber matchup. So those four games. But I don't think I've seen a baseball game on ABC Sports in years and years.
I couldn't pull when the last time was. Well, like, I'm sure Al Michaels was doing it with, like, Tim McCarver or something.
Right. Yeah, like 22 years ago. It was like when they probably on ABC the day there was, like, an earthquake with the A's and the Giants or something like that. It feels like an ABC
fifth grade
kind of game.
I mean, that's, yeah, something like that. That's wild. That
Dan Helley of cool. NFL Network is going to join us next. We will go around the horn after week three in football on Grant and Danny.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.